Can you go back about four slides though, to the first slide that Donna had, please? Keep going. This one. Donna, and I know there'll probably be a question, but I think this is important. We were subsidizing our budget by the tune of about $1.6 to $2 billion a year over the last several years out of savings. And there are some people that are concerned that if we reduce the budget, it will put us in the recession. We've been in recession for three, 4 years. The longest recession in the history of Alaska has been occurring, even though we've been putting an extra $2 billion a year in the budget. People are concerned that if we were to go through with all of these reductions that we're talking about, there'll be 600 individuals laid off from state government, and that it will it'll increase the unemployment rate. We were putting $2 billion into above and beyond what we could afford, and we still had the highest unemployment rate in the country and still do today. So the point is, and if Donna wants to speak to this a little further, just because you're putting money in it from the government side of things doesn't mean you're growing your economy. You could also be shrinking your private economy. And what's happened is, as Donna mentioned, because we do a lot in government for many, many Alaskans, the opportunity for private industry and folks to do private services that are done in other states really hasn't taken root in Alaska. So excess spend and more money does not necessarily translate into better results, including employment or a recession.
So in closing, before we turn it over to the Attorney General to talk about the constitutional amendments, just a couple bullet points to close on. Cost of doing nothing is too high. We've tried that for a long, long time, kicking the can down the road, call it what you will. But our CBR is under $2 billion. We've got a structured draw put in place for the earnings reserve, which is wonderful. We've got stable production on the North Slope, which we haven't seen in a while under this current tax regime. Fortunately, we are seeing investment, we are seeing stable production. But without controls, the government always grows. We've seen it. We're not making this up. It's happened in the past. Without protection, the PFD will go away. There's no way to sustain that level of government and give a dividend unless you're going to start overdrawing other accounts. Without a seat at the table, taxes are coming. The AG will speak a little bit to how that works with the constitutional amendments. And there's only one way to accomplish these goals. We can get the budget under control, but you have to lock it down in order to prevent the growth to just pop back up in future years. So we'll turn it over to the AG to speak a little bit about the amendments.
Thanks. Before I introduce our next guest, I want to introduce this guy right here. His name is Lincoln. He's my two-year-old. As you can see, he loves building sandcastles. And one of the problems he has, though, as he builds these sandcastles, is the waves come in, the water comes in, demolishes the sandcastle before he gets to finish it. What he doesn't understand is there's no foundation to keep that thing standing upright in the face of the wind and the waves. That's a lot like the legislature's inability to control spending. What we really need is the legislature to have sideboards or constitutional amendments that give us the foundation to ensure we have a strong fiscal plan. To introduce these three constitutional amendments is the Attorney General, Kevin Clarkson, who's had 34-year distinguished legal career in private practice before his appointment as the AG for the state of Alaska. He graduated with honors from Oregon State University and cum laude from Willamette University College of Law. Over the course of his long career, Mr. Clarkson has represented a myriad of clients, including individuals, Fortune 500 companies, native corporations, munis, electric utilities, small businesses, the legislature, and the state of Alaska. Mr. Attorney General.
Go ahead. So before the AG speaks about the constitutional amendments, the constitutional amendments, they're the cornerstone of this permanent fiscal plan. Without them, what you have is in fact sandcastles at high tide or low tide, meaning every year we build a budget, and then the following year it falls apart again. We have to rebuild it. Then the following year it falls apart again. We have to rebuild it. That just is constant instability. What these constitutional amendments do is the equivalent of building a concrete castle above high tide. It can withstand occasional storms, disasters, earthquakes, But generally speaking, the spend is contained to a certain amount. He's going to talk about the three constitutional amendments. Go ahead, just jump into it now, I guess.
All right, so the governor has proposed three constitutional amendments. So the governor and Commissioner Tangerman, Director Ardoin have talked to you about our fiscal situation and the governor's plan for dealing with it. What I want to do is walk you through the blueprints for how this will be put into place. So there are three constitutional amendments to provide sustainability, predictability, and affordability. What do we mean by that? Well, sustainability, what we mean is a budget that we can sustain and continues to sustain, not spending ourselves into bankruptcy, so a spending limit. Predictability, both for industry, for Alaska, so that industry can feel secure to come and invest in Alaska and not have to worry about Alaskans continuing to spend like crazy and then trying to pay for that spending by some form of a predatory tax on industry. And then predictability also for Alaskans with respect to their permanent fund dividends, so that they'll know what dividend they're going to receive, how much, because they'll be part of the process for determining what that will be. And then affordability, basically, again, spending within our means and having a savings plan in place. So the First Amendment sets an annual spending and savings rule to keep expenditures in line and not allow spending to increase when revenues are high. We'll save money when revenues are high. And when revenue is low, we can draw upon those savings to help make up our inability to meet our appropriation limit. Second, we'll have an amendment that will require a vote of the people before any broad-based, and what we mean by that is statewide tax, not municipal or local or borough taxes, statewide taxes can be put into place. The people will have to agree that any tax increase or new tax will occur before it can occur. And then lastly, we'll enshrine the PFD into the Constitution. We'll lock the current statutory calculation for that dividend into the Constitution and allow it to be changed only if the people agree that it should be changed. And then there will be a protection for the movement of the money as the money moves from the permanent fund to the program that pays dividends.
Yeah, can I just comment on the first? So there's the spending and savings limit is essential, as we talked about. Again, it would lock us into about the traditional spend of about 2.5% a year. But the great thing is, if we come into a windfall again, it's automatically saved. It's put into the permanent fund, potentially could be put into pay down some pension obligations, et cetera, but we don't spend it, we save it, we grow it. That's the key. So it locks us in on a certain spend, but any excess revenue is also diverted to savings. And then the other two are just really self-explanatory. If we're gonna tax you and take your money, I wanna know up front if that's okay with you. I don't wanna have to wait for you to do a repeal on a tax that's done by the legislature. So I'm saying employ you, get you involved up front, not in the back end, but getting your agreement that we may need a tax. And in order for that to happen, the legislature is gonna have to convince you beyond any doubt that we've done everything we could to hem in spending, find savings, make the programs run more efficiently. And if they can make that case to the public, then I would imagine you would agree to a certain type of tax at a certain amount. But again, what I'm saying is, right now, the legislature can impose a tax on you without your input, but you could repeal it, which becomes a problem for any type of permanent fiscal plan.
Very good. Next slide. So the first constitutional amendment is the appropriation limit. This is SJR 6 or SJR 5. So you might say, and actually, Commissioner Tangerman and the governor both told you, we already have an appropriation limit in our Constitution. But the problem with that appropriation limit is that it's ineffective. That limit right now is about $10 billion. So if we were to think about it, we're trying to grapple with a $1.6 billion deficit right now. If we were to spend this year to that appropriation limit, we would be grappling with a $6.8 billion deficit. Or think about it this way. We don't even have revenue sufficient to pay one-third of what that appropriation limit is. It's kind of like me setting the spending limit for my family at $1 million. Well, I guarantee you I'm not making $1 million a year in this job. And so that's a meaningless limit because I'm never gonna have enough money to spend $1 million anyway. All right, so what we need is a limit that's gonna have some meaning and some effect. And what the governor's amendment proposes is an amendment that would cap spending at a sustainable level and allow growth based on population and inflation. So as we grow in population, as inflation increases, the spending limit will adjust. There will be exceptions to the spending limit. PFDs will be an exception. Disasters, if we have another major earthquake, we'll be able to spend despite the appropriation limit to pay for damage that needs to be repaired. Significantly, capital spending will not be an exception to the limit. Capital spending will have to be made within the limit. And then the other significant part of this is that we will automatically save. So if we have revenue above the appropriation limit, we can all hope that we will have revenue above what the appropriation limit is. We'll save it automatically. First, the savings will go into the permanent fund to pay back the dividends that were paid to Alaskans. If we still have more excess revenue above that, we'll put that money into what we'll call a savings reserve fund. That savings reserve fund will replace the constitutional budget reserve fund that already exists, but which really doesn't function very well because the legislature can tap into the constitutional budget reserve fund for any purpose. It takes a 3/4 vote for them to tap into it, but they always get a 3/4 vote every single year. So it's not really a barrier. And they're spending that fund down, as has been explained to you. But what we'll do is we'll let them tap into the savings reserve fund easier. Simple majority vote, easier to get into it, but we'll limit what they can spend it on. The only thing they can use the savings reserve fund for is in lean years when we don't have enough revenue to enable the legislature to meet the appropriation limit. They'll be able to tap into the savings reserve fund to take out just enough to make up the difference so they can meet the appropriation limit. That's the way that fund will work. So the second constitutional amendment is the one that will limit the creation of new taxes or the increasing of the rate of existing taxes. Basically, think of it this way. In order for a new tax to be created or for the rate of an existing tax to be increased, both the legislature and the people will have to agree that that should occur. So there are two ways that new taxes or increased rates of taxes can occur. Can start with the legislature. The legislature creates law, right? Well, if the legislature creates a law or changes a law so that there's a new tax or an increased rate of an existing tax, that law will only go into effect if the people of Alaska at the next general election agree that that should occur.
We can I just say something? We sort of do this at the local level in municipalities. If you're going to raise a tax, it goes out on the ballot in many municipalities in order for the folks to vote to see if they want to raise their taxes. Places like the state of Washington, one of the reasons Washington is booming is because it's hard for them to put an income tax in because the people of Washington don't want an income tax. There's a sales tax in Washington. So every time there's talk about doing an income tax in the state of Washington, they don't get the support in the legislature to do it. And finally, Colorado, which has one of the hottest economies, they have a Tabor law in Colorado. And the Tabor law basically says there will be no taxes at the school district level, city level, county level, state level, unless the people of Colorado agree to it. So they don't tax a lot in Colorado. As a result, Colorado has all kinds of industry moving there, high-tech firms, you name it. It's hard to get an apartment now in Denver, a house in Denver, because it's just booming. When people and businesses know they can invest somewhere without there being a predatory tax put on them, they'll invest. Right now, Alaska is not in that category.
All right, the other way that a new tax can be created or the rate of a tax can be increased is by the people, by initiative. Well, if that occurs under this amendment, that new tax or that increased rate of a tax will also only take effect if the legislature in the next session agrees that that should occur. There has to be an agreement between the legislature and the people before any new tax or the increased rate of an existing tax. All right, next slide. So the third amendment is the Permanent Fund Dividend Amendment, SGR 5, HGR 6. So you all know that Alaskans the last few years haven't received a full permanent fund dividend, right? So the reason that happened is because the first time the legislature appropriated money from the Permanent Fund Earning Reserve account to move that money to the Permanent Fund Dividend Program so the dividends could be paid. And Governor Walker vetoed part of that appropriation. And that's why you all got a smaller dividend check. The next thing that occurred was that the legislature itself decided that they would just appropriate less money. They ignored the statutory calculation, a calculation that they created in statute, but they ignored it. And they decided to appropriate less money to pay you a smaller dividend. Then you received a smaller dividend. That was challenged. Someone took it to court, Senator Wilikowski, and the Alaska Supreme Court agreed that that was all perfectly fine. That's the way it should happen, because the money had to move by appropriation and the governor could veto an appropriation. So the Alaska Supreme Court ruled, and this is a quote, absent another constitutional amendment, the permanent fund dividend program must compete for annual legislative funding just as other state programs, close quote. What that means is, according to the Alaska Supreme Court, our constitution permits the legislature to appropriate or not appropriate to pay you a dividend, and for the governor, whatever governor that might be, to veto whatever appropriation might be made by the legislature. So you have no predictability about whether you're going to get a dividend or what amount of a dividend you might get. So what this amendment will do is it will establish in the Constitution the right of Alaskans to receive a permanent fund dividend. It will take the existing statutory calculation and lock it in place. The legislature will be permitted to change that if they want to, if they can get the votes to do it. But the only way that that will take effect is if the people of Alaska agree that that should occur. There will be no appropriation necessary to move the money from the earnings reserve account in the permanent fund to the program that pays the dividends to Alaskans. That's significant because if there's no appropriation, if the money just moves automatically, the legislature can't play around with how much that appropriation is or whether there is one. And also, a governor, not this governor, but another governor someday, can't interfere with that appropriation by vetoing part of that appropriation. And then lastly, of course, as I told you before, any change in the PFD, whether it's the amount, the calculation, the payment, it only takes effect if it's approved by the people of Alaska. So again, these three amendments provide sustainability, predictability, affordability for Alaskans.
So folks, remember what I said at the beginning, we've got a $1.6 billion deficit and only a few paths to resolve that deficit. The governor's fiscal plan balances the budget where revenues match expenditures without taking more money out of your pocket. And then those constitutional amendments provide Alaskans the opportunity to come to the table and have a voice in the future of this state. If you agree with any component of this plan, feel free to text to this number and stay informed from the governor's office. At this point, I'm going to turn the time back over to Americans for Prosperity. Thanks again for allowing us to have this opportunity, and we'll do a Q&A session.
All right, guys, we're going to take a quick 5-minute break. All the cards that you guys have, we'll have a few people coming through to collect them. So about five minutes. And also, we have a lot more food and stuff in the back, so please help yourselves. And yeah, we'll be back here in about 5 or 6 minutes. All right, guys, if you could go ahead and find your seat, we're going to go ahead and start the question and answer session. All right, guys, we are going to go ahead and begin our question and answer portion. So those of you in the back, if you could find your seat as quickly as possible. All right, so we are going to start with you, Governor. Governor, you faced a lot of backlash that these cuts are too severe. What is your response to that?
This thing has to be fixed, and it has to be fixed now. There really is no tomorrow. We've been kicking the can down the road for quite some time. As was mentioned, and I'll just wrap it up with this. Several years ago, I proposed a step-down process that would have reduced the budget when we still had about $8 billion in the CBR that would have gotten us there. I also proposed similar constitutional amendments on the spending limit. If that was in effect, if that was actually put in effect 3 years ago, we wouldn't be here today talking about this, and we would be building this state and bringing in more investment.
All right, thank you. And also would like to introduce two new additions to the panel. Jeff Crank is our regional director for Americans for Prosperity. And Larry, how do you pronounce your last name?
Barsico.
See, I would have ruined it. And Larry is director of operations for the Alaska Policy Forum. And so they're here to add additional perspective to some of these questions. And Jeff is was born and raised in Colorado, and so he has a unique perspective on Tabor, and he can kind of go over that and kind of give you another opinion from someone who actually lived in the state when this was enabled. And so actually, Jeff, we'll continue with you then. A taxpayer bill of rights is a new concept for a lot of people here in this room. Can you explain, since you're from Colorado, kind of what's going on there and how theirs has worked for their state?
Sure. Yeah. So the taxpayer bill of rights in Colorado was initiated by the people and voted on by the people, put into the Constitution in 1992. And I would just say this. First of all, I want to say this is a very courageous policy proposal. It's something that it takes courage to propose. But I think if you look down the road and the future of Alaska, it will be a very bright one. In most states, if you had a $1.6 billion shortfall in a place like Connecticut, you'd probably go to bed at night, and when you'd wake up the next morning, you'd find out that the legislature passed a bunch of tax increases to close that budget gap. That can't happen in Colorado because the people decided that they were going to make a change in 1992. What's happened in Colorado since then, the standard of living, there's been about a 30% increase in the standard of living for Coloradans from 1992 until now. The population has increased from 5 million people in Colorado in 1992 to 7 million people today. We were just talking before this event, the per capita cost of state government in Colorado versus Alaska. In Alaska, your state per capita cost is about $11,000. So per person, in the state of Alaska, $11,000. In Colorado, it's $4,200. So almost three times in Alaska. The budget in Colorado, for those who say, oh, this will just squeeze it down and you won't have the money to do anything, the budget in Colorado has increased by just about $1 billion every year for the last 11 years. It's a $30 billion, but just north of $30 billion in Colorado. Alaska, is in one of those unique situations right now where, and let me say one other thing. Colorado's Tabor, or Taxpayer Bill of Rights, it extends to every level of government. This is, your Alaska proposal is for the state government. In Colorado, there is a limit on every municipality, every single county or borough, as you have here, and they have to ask. And what a novel idea! And whenever I'm discussing this, and I have people say, "Well, this is just wrong. You can't do," if you're going to reach into someone else's pocket, it's just kind of polite to ask first before you do that. And I think that extends to you and I as people and citizens, but it extends to governments as well. And so, absolutely. And then the last point I'd make on that is we have added up the savings from 1992 per person in Colorado because of Tabor. If it would have gone unconstrained versus what it had to do under the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, and the average family of four in Colorado from 1992 till now has saved $24,000 in taxes over that period of time. There you go, Ryan.
All right, thank you. So this one, Governor, you or Donna can answer this one. There's obviously recently been a lot of discussion about eliminating oil tax credits. A lot are saying if we just get rid of the tax credits that we owe or continue to pay to the oil companies, this whole thing will go away and we can just continue as is. So can you guys address that?
The tax credits have been suspended. They've been eliminated. What we're doing is paying the amount that we've owed that folks have already done work as co-investors in the state of Alaska. So that program is done. It no longer exists in the form it was.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Tangeman, We're going now. We have a few more here. My understanding from Ledge Finance data is that current real per capita state spending is around $6,000, which is historically quite low. Is this true? And then a follow-up here. Isn't it also true that revenue, by the same measure, is lower than ever?
Well, I guess you can find ways to show whatever you want to show in a chart. The fact is that we're spending a lot more than we did. You saw the slide that the governor and Commissioner Tangeman talked from? That, not to get into what they're charting, but they're only showing the tail end of that, when we started spending way more money than we were taking in. And they're saying, just because we're doing the same thing now we did a few years ago, it's okay. It's not okay. The budget's unbalanced. You've seen the results. We spent down our savings. Our economy is still in recession, and we have to do better.
And as far as the revenues go, production, like I said, is flat for the foreseeable future. Under the previous tax regime, we were seeing 5 to 7% decline annually. Under this current tax regime, it's actually increased for 2 or 3 years, and we're forecasting it to be flat for the next 10 years. So again, that's what stability does. It allows for investment to come to the state. We're forecasting revenue or a price of oil in the mid-60s to low 70s over the next 10 years. So while it's not what it used to be production-wise, at least we have a stable forecast for the production side.
You know, I've heard this before. It's almost as if the people of Alaska have been waiting for somebody to just say, we're going to tax you. And there's just this collective sigh of relief. Well, thank God somebody finally is going to tax us. The issue is, again, if you're taxed $5,000 per person, what do you give up? What were you doing with that $5,000 before? It's not as if we all have a requisite amount in our piggy bank waiting for the government to come and get because they just didn't ask. A. B. A lot of these folks that are asking for a tax or take your permanent fund, have they volunteered their tax or their PFD? I'm not sure if they have. And again, the issue is if you keep spending at this current rate of 4.5% a year, there's just no way your expenditure or your revenue can keep up with your expenditures. So yes, we have less volume in the pipeline, which will translate into less revenue over time. But what did we do with the revenue that we had? We spent it all, $29 billion, gone. So the idea that all we have to do is tax, like it's an amulet or a poultice or something strange like that, that it's going to make things better. The question I ask people is, what kind of tax? How much? Who's exempt? Who makes those exemptions? What's the rates? And when I start asking those questions, it kind of falls apart. There's no amount of tax or taking the PFD that can keep up with the rate of spend we've been doing. It's that simple. Unless we get that down. Doesn't matter. You're just going to, whatever tax you do is just going to get chewed up in that expenditure.
Go ahead and hold on to that microphone, Governor. We got a tough one here for you. Can't let you off easy.
6'7". No, I'm
all
sorry.
Right, hang on, next. So, Governor, why did you partner with AFP for your events?
We've partnered with a whole bunch of outfits. We didn't want to spend money from the government to go around and do a very expensive roadshow. AFP offered a venue and offered an opportunity. We met with a business alliance this morning that put on a presentation. We will be meeting with Chambers, the Miners Association. They've all offered to help. So we've taken the offer to be able to get out and talk with the people of Alaska. I know there are some that would prefer us partner up with other outfits. Let us know who the outfits are, and let's have a conversation as to what venues they're looking at so we can have these conversations. We're open to anything.
All right, next one is for you, Mr. Clarkson. What exactly will it take to get the PFD protected in the Alaska State Constitution?
Well, what it takes to pass an amendment to the Constitution is, first, a resolution from the legislature. That requires a simple majority vote of the legislature. So if you have legislators out there that you have contact with, you need to contact them and let them know that they should be voting for the governor's amendments. They need to move them through the committees and they need to vote for them. The second thing that has to happen is that it goes to the people for a vote at the next general election for ratification. That's a simple majority vote. So first of all, it's up to your legislators to pass the resolution for the amendments, simple majority vote, and then it's up to you all and the rest of Alaskans to ratify an amendment by a simple majority vote at the next election.
All right, thank you. Ms. Ardwin, this will be for you. The question states here, do you have any idea how much your draconian cuts will hurt our state? The education cuts will mean large class sizes, less access to technology, cuts to sports and extracurricular activities, and closure of some schools. This will hurt our most precious citizens, students, and will devastate our communities. People will move out of state, local businesses will fail, our future will be lacking in education workforce. Real people are hurt by cuts. You guys' response?
I want to correct something before Donna answers that question. That is, I misspoke. It takes a two-thirds vote in the legislature to pass a resolution for an amendment, not a simple majority.
Thanks. Did you get through all that?
That's it, yep.
So as we've been discussing today, the economy is not hurt by reducing government spending. Our economies are helped when we bring outside investment, private investment, capital to the state. That's what the governor is going to do. So our economy will be better off by fixing this fiscal situation and letting would-be investors know that we're open for business in Alaska. We've also showed you that the fiscal situation is unsustainable. So if you're a school district or any of those other things that you listed, right now you're in a completely unstable situation. You can't plan for next year because we're in a fiscal crisis and we don't know where the next dollar is going to come from. We've drained our savings accounts. We've run out of our chances to keep spending more than we're taking in. And then finally, the private sector with your dividends can do more for the economy than we can do as a government. And I guess in one more note, I mean, I talked briefly about the spending drivers of the state. Spending more money does not equal better results. We've been spending a lot more money. We've been spending more money. We've tried that. It has not equaled better results. So let's get our fiscal house in order and let the governor reform those things that we spend money on so we can get better outcomes to our families.
Larry, did you want
to? So to add to that, can I get you to hold that up? So we can see this a little bit better. Some of you may have seen this graphic before. This is updated for the 2020 operating budget. These three blocks, this is health and social services, this is education and early development, so K-12 education, this is University of Alaska. These three blocks basically equal everything else that the government is doing. So these are the areas that are driving the bulk of state spending. Our students, the amount of money that is going into K-12 education puts us at the top spender nationally. Per student, we spend more money than any other state. If we had top results, outcomes from our schools, this would be a different conversation, but we don't. We're 51st in the nation in reading. We're 40th and 45th in math outcomes. These things are facts. So we have to take a look at where can we find efficiencies. Obviously, more money is not the solution to it. We have 54 school districts in the state of Alaska. If you took out the Mat-Su Borough, you took out Anchorage, and you took out Kenai, you have approximately 30,000 students spread over 51 districts. Each district with a superintendent, associated staff, associated infrastructure. That doesn't strike me as the most efficient way to go forward. There has to be a way to consolidate, to find efficiencies within K-12 education.
And I'll leave this open to whoever you guys want to respond to this. It's going back to oil taxes And the question is, why not tax oil and gas corporations to help balance the budget and add state revenue? And then the other part of that is, why also not go after additional revenue streams?
We do tax the oil industry. We do. I know there's folks that say we give them money. We tax the oil industry. And that's what's built Alaska the past 4 years. Venezuela's taxed the oil industry too. They've taxed it pretty high. Venezuela has more oil reserves than any other country on the face of the earth. They have more oil reserves than Saudi Arabia, the Middle East, Russia. And they tried an experiment under the current president and the former president. And that was to tax as much as possible to nationalize the industries. I was just at a conference in Texas. Even though Venezuela has all this oil, investors are not going anywhere near Venezuela because the country itself is falling apart. The infrastructure is falling apart. It's not a good investment. It's not a good risk for them. And so, sure, we can do that. I mean, if it's such a great idea, again, I go back to the details, the devil's in the details. What rate? How much? Because if 20% is good, why not tax it more? 40% would be better. Or even 80% would be better. Now, people are going to say, now you're getting ridiculous, Dunleavy. In a way, I am, but I'm trying to illustrate a point. There's going to come a point where you tip the balance with taxation of companies. Doesn't matter if it's oil, mining, timber. It really doesn't matter. People. If it's such a good idea, let's tax ourselves at 80%. 80 cents on the dollar goes to the government. I don't think that's going to work for folks. It doesn't seem to work for Venezuela. So we have a tax in place. And again, if you look at the graphs, whether it's an oil tax, a PFD tax, an income tax, if we get more money for government, what are they going to do? They're not going to save it. They're going to spend it. That's the problem.
And I can add a little bit specifically to the oil tax issue, because it's a debate that we've had for 15, 20 years, and it's a debate that we insist having every single year, which in and of itself leads to incredible instability. One thing, the biggest thing that we learned during the ACES debate during that issue was that Alaska has to compete. When prices went to triple digits, what opened up? North Dakota became a player. Texas. California passed us in production. So now it's no longer a hypothetical. ACES was a hypothetical bill, or it was a hypothetical piece of legislation that it was an interesting concept, but there was nothing in its history that showed it was going to work this way. So now we can look back 5 years under the current tax regime, 5 years under the previous one, ACES. What did we see? During ACES, we saw prices go to triple digits. We saw flat investment, and we saw decline in production of 5 to 7% annually. What have we seen under this regime? Flat production. Actually, it increased for the first couple of years under it, but now we're forecasting flat because of the investment we're seeing. And, oh, by the way, prices are half the price of what they were under ACES. We've been in, you know, as low as 26, but we're in that 50 to 60 range right now. So again, we don't have to make up anything. We don't have to, if this happens, then that happens. We can look back and see what actually has historically happened under the two regimes. And we've also learned that we have to compete. And that's what we're gonna have to continue to do. The production is not getting any easier on the North Slope. We're getting further west and further east, hopefully eventually, from Prudhoe and TAPS. And it's going to get more and more expensive to produce the resource that we all know is out there. It's being discovered right now. But unless we get the private sector to come and invest in our state, we certainly don't have the revenue to invest in it and produce it. We need to partner with industries who do have the balance sheet to come invest that money and produce the oil.
Thank you. Larry, your group, Alaska Policy Forum, has obviously examined the budget, and can you kind of give us some of your thoughts on going through this, how this maybe versus the Walker proposed budget, what are some of the things that stood out and you think are important to Alaska?